Just a few days ago, on October 6th of 2025, the Turkish Minister of Culture and Tourism, Mehmet Nuri Erzoy, made an announcement that got a lot of attention. It seems that one of those T-pillars that's really popular in that whole area of Turkey with Göbekli Tepe and Saybuk and Karan Tepe in this case, one of those T-pillars they found has a human face carved into the end of it. And this is really a big deal, because a lot of these T-pillars have carvings on them, most in fact, and the ones that we've found quite frequently have arms going down the side and then meeting near the navel, very reminiscent of Easter Island, as a matter of fact. But none of them had heads on them. They just had these T's that we were pretty sure was a representation of a head. But this makes it clear. Here's a face. No ifs, ands, or buts about it. It's pretty much obviously a head. So that makes these T-pillars, well, probably human. But there's a lot more to it than just that. We've got a lot of anthropomorphic statues all around the Tes Tepelar cultures area of the world there that, you know the words I'm trying to say. And it's really interesting when you look into it, because these different statues vary in degree, not only of artistic skill, but also in like what you would think would be symbolism. Like, this is a very simple face compared to some of the other ones. So let's talk about the implications of these things. Let's talk about why you might see a head on the end of one of these statues and not on the end of other ones. And well, let's just discuss some of the other statues in the area while we're at it, just to make sure we know what the heck we're talking about. Hi, my name's Dan, and welcome to Dedunking. Now, Karan Tepe is about 40 miles from Göbekli Tepe, and it's well known for the large dug-down enclosure with the spooky human kissy face that dominates one end of the pit. According to mainstream historians, this area is part of the overall beginning of the transition from a nomadic hunter-gatherer lifestyle to one of permanent settlements. And to the mainstream historian, this explains why they had like all these large earthworks and places made for people to live in and places made to store food and presumably to do, you know, ceremonies and some sort of ritual activity or whatever. But to the alternate historian, this is more of a place where we see a transference of technology from a people that were more advanced than the people in Turkey at the time, and some cataclysm wiped them out, you know, a la Atlantis. And then they landed up there and transferred their technology. It wasn't that the people in Turkey learned to farm, it's that they were taught to farm. In addition to teaching the locals to farm, they showed them how to build megalithic structures, to use some sort of writing to record their culture, and to otherwise basically restart civilization. Indeed, Dr. Martin Sweatman has gone into detail on the meaning of Pillar 43, otherwise known as the Vulture Stone, in Göbekli Tepe, and his hypothesis is very intriguing. Even if he is completely wrong, the idea that many varied markings in the region with patterns and obvious design are some form of writing, that isn't a crazy idea. My point is this area is extremely intriguing to both the alternate historian and the mainstream historian alike. There's a lot of reasons for us to be digging there. No matter who you ask, we're going to believe that agriculture has a lot of important history to be found here. Proto-writing probably has a lot of important history to be found here. The beginning of megalithic architecture, at least in the modern age to the alternate historian, all have a start here. So this place, this Tes Tepelar area of Turkey, these handful of settlements that we know of with these T-shaped pillars, they tend to attract a lot of attention from everyone when something cool is discovered there. And I, for one, advocate for as much more excavations as possible. The excitement in the region is so high that when a series of smaller, short T-shaped pillars was found at Karan Tepe, it was all over the internet immediately. Any new discovery in the region attracts a massive amount of attention, and this face was absolutely no different. It was found on pillars that are much shorter than the ones that most are familiar with, about 3 to 4 feet tall, in fact. The pillar with the face was found with three other pillars in a small enclosures that researchers are pretty sure was a domestic enclosure. In other words, these pillars were part of a house they believed to help prop up a little roof, place where people raised their kids and people ate their meals and cared for their sick. And they would look up at one of their pillars and see this face on it. And like I say at the beginning, we've known for a while that it looks like these T-pillars were made to resemble humans because of the arms. But this really puts it right on the nose, pun fully intended. There's no question that this is a human face, and the pillars are human effigies. Now, we have seen this sort of face in the region before, the T-shaped nose and brow with a less obvious shaping of the cheeks and chins. Multiple faces in the Tes Tepelar region have this style of artwork, but it's certainly not the only one that was made to resemble humans, as the kissy face, I'm sure, will remind you immediately. And while there's many other styles, it seems that this was the most common way of making human faces that they used at the time. And that's important to note that scholars believe there is good evidence that most human statues in the area have had their heads removed and placed in other areas, often in a deliberate fill, and usually found in those enclosures treated somewhat ceremonially. The animal statues seem to have been exempt from this treatment, but for example, at Göbekli Tepe, 43 human statues are known to exist, and only 9 have not been deliberately defaced. And this stands in stark contrast to Urfaman, or the Kissy Face, or the pillar that they just discovered. Now, Urfaman is another major discovery in the region. In fact, it's the oldest known anthropomorphic statue in existence. And it wasn't deliberately defaced. It was made with greater skill than those T-faces that we're talking about that we found on the end of the pillar. But one thing it has in common with that T-face that makes it worth mentioning here is they both lack a mouth. Now, the experts consider this to be significant in some way, a symbol for silence or a symbol for maybe it's a god, like a strong silence type of deity, so it doesn't need a mouth to speak. It just speaks through actions. There's a lot of different ideas around why something would be missing its mouth. But the fact of the matter is some statues have mouths and some do not. It's really hard to guess at what these things may mean without some sort of touchstone to our mind, some way to know the start from a point that's not complete guesswork. But we lack that in most areas. We can really only guess at what things meant to the ancients. But one thing that is clear is their emphasis on the mouth of this kissy face thing, and the lack of the mouths on some other statues seem to have some sort of implication. And there's more anthropomorphic statues in Taz Tepelar. There's this guy with the big old barred teeth and the eyebrows that are really pronounced and stuff. It's very clearly made by a much more skilled artist than it would take to make just a T to form a brow ridge and a nose. But obviously, this thing's got a mouth. And it seems like there may have been some sort of method to this madness. Some of these with mouths for a reason and some without, but it's lost to us now. And several other statues do exist in the area, and some are similar to others, but some are, like the Kissy Face, are more unique. And there are many more representations of humans to be found in the Taz Tepelar lexicon, and my personal favorites are found at Saybuk, where we find a relief carving of the beginning of the Master of Beasts, which is a person with a big animal on both sides, quite often a large cat, which is what we have here. And we see this symbol on both sides of the old world and the new. We see it for thousands of years. It continuously shows up, this symbol of humans kind of dominating an animal on either side. Another symbol that we see there is what looks to be the beginning of Orion and Taurus. We have a bull charging a man with his weapon raised above his head. It looks very, very similar to Orion and Taurus. So these are the kind of things that, well, personally, I find them extremely intriguing. You can say that, you know, that we don't know how far back into prehistory Orion and Taurus goes, and that's true, but that doesn't debunk the idea of this being the first ones of those that we found. As a matter of fact, if we don't know, this is a good chance that that this is the first time that we saw Orion and Taurus and the Master of Beasts. The similarities are uncanny. And this is reminiscent of the work of Dr. Martin Swetman and what he did with Göbekli Tepe's Pillar 43. He claims it's an astronomical clock, a signpost, saying we are here, basically. A specific date, perhaps the beginning of their era, perhaps the date of the destruction of the old era. You know, there's really a lot to unpack here, and I have spoken to Dr. Swetman at length on my channel. If you want to hear more about it, check in with him there. Now, I will say here that the idea that humans were obsessed with the stars and that we used them to navigate and to keep time is not crazy and is something that we probably did for much further back into prehistory than we would normally give it credit for, than I think academics give it credit for sure. It seems to me that this is the kind of thing that we would have been using as soon as we were able to kind of look up at the stars and realize that there was any pattern to it. I don't think it would take a few generations for people to start using that to some degree. We know that it's the sky tells us when it's warm and when it's cold. It tells us when to go inside and when to stay outside, right? I'm sure they can do more than that too. And it didn't take long, I don't think, for humans to figure this one out. Now, the Taz Tepelar area, if you look at it through this lens of archaeoastronomy, as this is known, the study of how the ancients looked at stars, If you look at it through that lens, it really does open up a lot of other things that could potentially be there as well. For example, it could explain even why Göbekli Tepe exists. And the other settlements aren't so bad, but Göbekli Tepe is kind of enigmatic. It's enigmatic. It doesn't have, like, dwelling places. There's no place to, like, sleep there. Doesn't look like there's a place to sleep. It doesn't look like there's a place for them to have gotten water there, like, easily. It's an inhospitable little chunk of the area. I mean, it's actually like the kind of area where you'd expect to like find like animals that would fight with you to try to eat you and shit. I mean, it's not a good place to go, but if you were trying to look at stars, it's a brilliant place to go. So it doesn't mean for sure that that's what it was for, but perhaps it was a huge ceremonial center and part of it was astronomically inclined. Again, it's really difficult to say when we look at these things, but the more knowledge that we have, the more we can speculate with our feet on the ground. And that context is important to keep in mind when we look at the newly found face. For example, many have asserted that the round symbol on Pillar 43, the sun, as Dr. Martin Sweatman claims, is in fact a human head belonging to the decapitated body below, thereby debunking the idea that it represents the sun, thereby debunking the idea that this is a sort of calendar stone. But we see that human faces went on heads quite often. There are T-pillars with what are presumably heads with no face, but these have arms to show they are humans, and the placement of the would-be head is then apparent. The carvings on the T-pillars are quite intricate, and some of the most interesting features are found on the pillars themselves. But we don't know when the ones that were vandalized were defaced. We don't know why some of the heads were left, why others were destroyed or moved. We don't know why any of these symbols mean for certain. With the exception of some astronomical symbolism and some vague notion of a skull cult, we really have no idea of what was going on in this part of the world 12,000 years ago in the minds of the people. It is very difficult for us to suss. It is possible that that round part was meant to be a head and that they erased the face from it, although that wouldn't be something that was normal in the region that we've seen. It is possible that it was meant to represent both the sun and the head of that decapitated body below. It is possible that it's meant to represent just the sun. It's possible that everybody here is wrong or that it just represents something else entirely, although I would go out on a limb and say what as intricate as these patterns are, it's not just a bunch of bullshit. And despite being ill-equipped to answer these questions, I'll go ahead and try. At least with this pillar. Why does it have a face when none of the other T-pillars do? Well, it's a domestic enclosure, they say. A domicile, a home. A place where a family resided, raising their young, caring for their sick, eating their meals. Perhaps this was a home for a noble family and that having this was, you know, a sign of nobility. Or perhaps this was a symbol to, like, ward off illness or something. If it was something that they put in there to, like, here's the sick tent. You put people in there and this will cure them. Kind of like the stick with the snake that Moses was said to have used. Perhaps it was a curse. Perhaps, it, like, this thing was, like, something you'd go put somebody to go look at that face in the scary, scary firelight. I mean, just imagine being a kid waking up at 3 o'clock in the morning, sleeping on that floor, and then you look up and there's this dim firelight, fire's barely playing on that face. And that's the kind of thing that would definitely mess with somebody's head, right? I mean, there's going to be power in this stuff, in the minds. And the more imagination you apply, the more powerful it's going to seem. So to me, there's a very good possibility that it is just a decoration that somebody's like, you know what, look really cool on the other my T-pillar is a fucking head. So they just scratched one there. I mean, it is basically the lowest skill version of a human face that we see there. They just kind of carve that T and you can call that a human, right? Just knock a little off the chin there and you're good to go. But that doesn't mean that that's what it's for. And, it, you know, it's difficult because on one hand, you're tempted to like superimpose our values and stuff over it. On the other hand, you're tempted to like consider them more imagination based when it comes to like symbolism and stuff. So it becomes very difficult to really even know. Again, it could have been just a decoration. This could have been something that you could have been killed for having if you weren't in the right tribe. It's really difficult to say. What I can say is that it proves beyond the shadow of a doubt that those T-pillars represented humans in the mind of the people that were there. And that does at least give us some grounds to run from when we go to interpret other pillars in the future. Doesn't mean that every pillar represents a human, but it does mean that I would personally posit that the idea of a pillar, it means something that's thinking. Even if there's nothing on the pillar to imply human, it does imply something with agency or something with thought. I believe that is what they're trying to show with the T-pillar when it's not anthropomorphic. And ultimately, I think it's important for us to not get too caught up in the meaning of every little symbol. I mean, look at the earliest writings that we know of. We have gods and myths, but also inventories and love letters and complaints about inferior copper.
EA, ripping people off since the Bronze Age.
Point is, many of the carvings and art that we see from those days is probably not made for some high-minded idea. I mean, look at music, man. Sometimes a song is about king and country and God or whatever. Other times it's just about stuff that'll get your videos demonetized. But a lot of times it really only got nothing to do with some high-minded idea, right? It's just music. It's just got a good hook. It just makes people dance. It just makes them feel good. And I'm going to go out on a limb and say, even 12,000 years ago, you had some people that thought that that feeling was a manifestation of God or of spirit or of some magic. And you're going to have other people that are very skeptical of the ideas of spirits and existing at all. You probably are going to have a caveman 12,000 years ago who's like, gods? Spirits? I was there the day Grok got beat to death by a cave bear, and there weren't no gods on that hill. I'm quite certain that you heard those exact same arguments way back then. So when we look at art, we look at symbolism from way back in those days, it's very important to keep in mind humans are fucking complex, ideas are complex, and the art that we make is going to be equally complex. If we don't have a cultural touchstone, we ain't going to figure much out. Well, thank you very much for watching. And before I go, I want to invite you to come to Arizona this December 5th through 7th for the Quest for Ancient Civilizations Conference. I'll be there, and a whole bunch of other YouTubers you probably like more than me, or guys that I like more than me, are going to be there. It's going to be great. Make sure and get your tickets as quickly as you possibly can. Links down below. Thank you very much. Links to support the channel are down below. Thank you very much. See you next time. Have a good evening. I've got another video coming soon with any luck. Take care.